Welcome to the Sharing Project podcast. I'm your host, Kristen. Join me as I share candid conversations with inspirational people in my life. We will discuss the meaning of life, our soul's purpose, making big decisions, and much, much more. Thanks for being here. Just a quick trigger warning that this episode does contain conversation about child abuse. Okay, you guys, welcome back. I am so honored and happy to present to you my conversation today in this episode with Brianna Capodaconal. Just know that every single moment of this conversation with Brianna, I was just on a cloud in heaven. There's so much more that we could have talked about, and I'm hoping, praying that the stars align and we get to do this again. But you will not be sorry that you listened to this beautiful episode. Brianna is a licensed marriage and family therapist. Okay. She's amazing. She's beautiful. She has so much heart that she brings into her work. She specializes in infant, early childhood, and perinatal mental health. And she is the voice behind Conscious Mommy. Conscious Mommy has a very large, beautiful online presence. It's where I follow Brianna, specifically on Instagram, at Conscious Mommy. And she puts out amazing videos, reels, posts, lots and lots of beautiful material to get us to really think about, reflect, improve upon, grow, stretch into, evolve into parenting, to become more conscious, loving parents, not only to our children, but to ourselves. Brianna is a mom to two boys. They are gorgeous. She is a boy mom just like me. She's a little bit behind me. Her boys are 2 and 5, and mine are 5 and 8. So, you know, just right in the middle of it. We have so much to say. And what I'll share with you what Brianna shared with me after we stopped recording was that she was really happy to be on a podcast episode where she got to really talk about her own process, her own journey, not just about the work that she does, but really how who she is and how her life experience informs what she brings to the table and what she brings to share with the world with her work. I just think she's such a beautiful example of living from the inside out. Listen for the embarrassing part where I talk about that she's made of heart muscle, which is kind of a grotesque image, but it's how I see Brianna. She is just a beautiful, I keep using the word beautiful, but I don't know what else to say. She is a loving presence in my life, and I'm so happy to be sharing her with you today. Here is my conversation, my blessed and beautiful conversation with Brianna Capodaconal on the Sharing Project podcast. Please, please enjoy. So here we are. I'm here with Brianna, and it's really, really good to have you here. Thanks for agreeing to come onto my little podcast on this rainy day.
Thanks for making this. I know. I love this rainy day. It's so different than what we're used to in Southern California. But yeah, thank you for having this podcast and, you know, for being a friend for so long. It's for knowing each other.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about how we know each other. Mm-hmm. And then I want you to tell the people what else you want them to know about you. But we met singing at church.
Mm-hmm. At St. Monica.
At St. Monica. Dan. Through Dan, our good friend Dan Howes. God bless him. He's mm-hmm. the bridge to a lot of great people in my life. I'm so thankful for
Me
him.
Too. He's the best.
We met singing at that young adult mass years mm-hmm. ago. I don't even know how many at this point. And then we did a play together at church. We did that remember?
Oh my gosh, with Michelle Crenshaw. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that was so much fun. I completely forgot that we did that together.
Remember that?
Yes.
That was our season.
That was at a really I was in a big transition stage of my life at that time. Mm. I had just got into graduate school, and I was ending a really big relationship at that time, and I was starting to have some complicated feelings about Catholicism and just religion in general.
This is already getting juicy. I love it.
I know, I'm kind of an open book.
Amen.
And I was like having some, I was starting to have some feelings, but like, it was so complicated because I was so driven to, like, I love God and I love Jesus and I love the way that we are told to love each other and to be a source of love and light. And I, at that time in my life, was feeling so dark. Mm. It was like, I was not feeling what I feel like I was kind of practicing or was trying to practice and was trying to embody. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't actually feeling it. I was just like going
with
the flow. You
were like projecting it, but you weren't absorbing it. Like it wasn't.
Correct.
Yeah. I hear that so much. I feel like I'm that right now, actually. But yeah. Mm-hmm. So you were there. So that was pre-kids for both of us. Mm-hmm. I was actually getting ready to get married.
I remember.
Yeah.
You had met your husband, and I think you guys got engaged like really quickly, right?
We did right away, 12 days.
That's it. Yeah, I remember. It was quick.
12 days.
Yeah.
And then so this was that following like winter, spring. And then I was to get married that May. So this was right before I was like sitting, you know, in the wings between scenes planning my wedding. Mm. So interesting. So you were about to enter your graduate program.
I was in graduate school.
You were in
school.
It. Okay. That led you to what you're doing today.
Correct. I was deconstructing my family system. That was when I like finally started to get deep into therapy. You know, the first 2 years of therapy, I sat on the couch and cried. I did not say words for 2 years. I literally just cried for two straight years. And I can't believe that my therapist was capable of holding space for that.
Amazing.
It's kind of wild and weird.
I can imagine your therapist preparing for those sessions, like, just like lighting the candle and just breathing, being like, here we go. What's Brianna bringing today?
Just going to come in and cry. Wow. That was how much cortisol and stress and trauma I just had built up inside my body. And I never knew how to release it. You know, singing was always a good release. I love dancing. You know, I pole dance. So pole dancing was always a good release. Like these are all like good releases for me. But as I get older and I continue to, you know, work on myself, I realize it's not solely about the release, but it's actually about the encounter with what we're experiencing. How do I encounter it and understand what it is trying to teach me? Now, my, you know, early 20-year-old self was not going to be able to look at profound sadness and very complicated grief and trauma with a curious mindset. There's no way I would have been able to do that. I needed to release it before I can see it. Do you see what I mean? And now I'm at a stage in my life where it's that encounter is what gives me some peace. It's what slows me down. It is what allows me.
Can you say more about that? Can you say more about the encounter?
Yeah. So, you know, with my story, I feel like I was the abuse, the physical, psychological, emotional abuse that we experienced is not an uncommon tale of where I grew up outside of Pittsburgh, PA. And also I feel like in folks in our generation, Gen X and millennial folks, you know, we got our asses handed to us. You know what I mean? Like it was tough in many ways. I know not everybody experienced this, but this was certainly my experience. And I did a lot of running for a long time and a lot of escaping and a lot of repressing and a lot of hiding. You know, perfectionism is really like my mask of choice, if you will. Looking perfect, hair perfect, makeup perfect. I mean, if you're just listening, my hair and makeup is done for a podcast. For a podcast, my hair and makeup is done.
Yeah. Well, you never know.
So that's something that I really do hide behind. I'm aware that that is a mask of mine. As well as, you know, a bunch of other things. And that was all in attempts to not have to feel. the mm-hmm. depths of my my grief and my pain. You know, I grew up with a lot of gaslighting. You deserved it. You deserve to be beat like that. You deserve to be shamed like that. You deserve to feel bad about yourself because you are bad. Mm. Was the kind of interactions that we had. And I'm, you know, the oldest daughter and the firstborn daughter. So I definitely suffer from oldest daughter syndrome, mm-hmm. Where a lot of that pressure to be perfect and to have it all look easy mm-hmm. Was definitely on my shoulders. And then when I went to graduate school and I started to encounter people of all different kinds of backgrounds, not just Italian people, which is essentially what I grew up around, I learned that there are, like, this is this, what I grew up with was not to be not necessarily expected. Mm. And that was the start of me learning to release. Thank God I was in theater school. Thank mm-hmm. God. Do you know this story, Kristen? I applied to one university.
Okay.
And I applied to NYU. That has like a 10% acceptance rate.
That was it.
I did not have a particularly high SAT score. And I mean, you've heard me sing, like, I'm good, but I'm not like some ridiculously talented person by any means.
You are, side note, but okay, back to you.
I'm really not. I would say I'm maybe like slightly above average. Like, I do really good karaoke because, you know, because it's karaoke and nobody does karaoke well. You know what I mean? So I apply to one school and I'm like 17 years old. This was how desperate I was. I said, I am either going to go to Tisch, NYU, which is ridiculously hard to get into, or I'm going to move to New York City and be a waitress. But those are my options. I'm not staying here. That was how bad it was for me. Mm-hmm. So thank freaking God that I got into NYU. And I got into drama and musical theater.
Yeah.
Do you know? You do know. I don't have to tell you how healing it is to do drama for oneself. Mm. Because that's what the whole first year was about. It wasn't about being a great actor or a great actress. Mm-hmm. It was about stripping down all of your masks and all of your layers and learning how to be in your own body. Mm-hmm. This was profound for a person who got comfortable dissociating and being outside of my body because of all the physical abuse and trauma that I experienced. To get into my body was a incredibly profound experience. This was my start to learning how to get in and learning how to release. And I remember like doing strange exercises. Like, we would have to, the half of the group would get up on, lay down on the floor on one side of the room, and the other half would lay down on the other side. And then we'd have to roll. And if you encountered another person, you couldn't use words to negotiate the space. Mm. You just had to use your body language and roll over on top of each other.
Oh my God.
Listening
to that, I'm like so uncomfortable with the prospect of that. It's so vulnerable.
The anxiety in me. I was like, oh, I can't put my weight on these people. They're going to know how much I weigh. I'm going to crush them. I'm going to be too much for them. Mm. That was my first encounter that I'm terrified, literally terrified. Mm. Of being more than what other people can handle.
Mm. Wow. And how did you move through that?
You have no other choice. You roll. You roll.
What was that like for you to learn? And did you learn that, like,
I did learn.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm not too much.
Yeah. That's a progressive learning. I'm still learning that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in that moment, I remember when I rolled over somebody who I would have, you know, labeled as quite petite, right? Mm-hmm. And I would not consider myself a petite person. I wouldn't consider myself a super large person, but like, I'm kind of like right in the middle. And when I rolled over this petite person, And I let my body really just open up and sink in. And it was okay. Like I wasn't too much. I started bawling my eyes out. Mm-hmm. I was, and then I looked around the room and I saw so many other people just like crying while they were doing this weird, literally weird rolling exercise.
I'm crying just imagining this happening.
It was so freaking profound. Again, 18 years old, made this massive decision, left everything I know to just try to find myself. And I was doing it. I was finding myself just step by step. I'm continuing to work on this feeling of being too much. And I think as I step more into my career and, you know, things start to grow in my career and my visibility continues to grow, definitely these wounds of being too much, not being, and also simultaneously not being enough, which is just, how do you even reconcile those two things? They don't make sense together.
It's like our burden as women, I feel. Yeah. Not to be too generalistic about it, but it's like.
No, it's true.
I think it's just that weird space that we have to figure out how to navigate.
Yeah.
Because yeah. we're supposed to fit into this such a narrow spot that it's impossible to mm-hmm. exist there peacefully without right. learning to push those boundaries.
Right. That I can be both enough and it's not a thing, it's not a bad thing to be too much. And to like be both of those at the same time mm-hmm. is very, very challenging to try to navigate, but I'm working on it. And I definitely can feel those wounds surface a lot of the time. Now, here's how it's different. In my early 20s, I would want to try to release that by crying or movement or sex or, you know, wine or pot or something of that nature. I'd want to either try to cope with it or get it out of me. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing to use your resources to cope. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as I get closer and closer to 40, you know, it happens. You start to recognize these things are just going to keep coming back. Like it's not going anywhere.
Mm.
And so I can keep trying to push it away or I can actually encounter it. Mm. I can ask it, like, what are you here to teach me?
Mm.
And that's what I've been working on. So when too big comes in, you're too mm-hmm. big, you're too much. What are you trying to protect me from? What are you trying to teach me?
Mm.
And I haven't quite fully gotten an answer yet, but I'm opening the door to the conversation and I certainly hope I get an answer at some point.
Woman, I have like 50 tangents like poking out of my mind right now into all of these different bubbles because there's so much that I want to unpack with you. It's like, where do we even go with this? So I've watched you, you know, develop this public presence that you're, mm-hmm. that you're talking about, that you're nurturing mm-hmm. and you're fostering. And number one, I've been so proud of you. I'm like, oh my God, she's doing the thing. Look at her. From the moment I met you and now, and as we're talking, I'm remembering actually when I actually met you. I think you actually came up to the choir at the end of Mass and was like, I'm Brianna and I just moved here and I want to join the choir. And I've always experienced you as a person who is a lot, but like in a really, really good way. Like when I hear you express, hesitation or lack of confidence or what's the word I'm looking for? When I hear you express these challenges that you have, it surprises me. And this is for me as a person who's always been on the shy side, but who's also always been very public. I've always been a performer, but I'm a shy performer. I find myself very attracted to people like you, to you specifically, but to people like you, because it's like, oh, she has this something where she's like, she's a lot and she knows it. She's awesome. And so it surprises me when I hear you say that you have well, first of all, learning about your trauma, which I think if I remember correctly, you've been a lot more public and open about since your mother's passing, if that's accurate. I wonder if we could talk maybe a little bit there about how her passing has affected your path in life and how it's, you know, affecting your choice to, I mean, affecting your choice to focus your career on parenting, on educating people about parenting. Why is this important to you? Like, how has your life path led you? And whatever you're comfortable sharing about that relationship with your mom.
So I had a very complicated relationship with my mom. I always knew that my mom loved me, but I never felt her love, really. It was like an intellectual knowing, but she really struggled to like get me, like to like convey it in a way that felt safe and good. She did have moments. There were really important, redeemable moments that my mom did have. You know, when I had a group of friends in college who, well, not a group, it was one friend who was upset that I got cast in a show and she didn't, and ended up, you know, she was my roommate and she turned against me and was able to manipulate other folks and get them to kind of detach from me. And it was really, really hard on me. And I developed these physical mouth sores and I couldn't eat. I lost like 20 pounds. It was just, it was very traumatic for me. My mom came, I'm going to get teary. She came to New York City, slept in my dorm bed, and just like spent time with me. That is a very clear memory I have, where my mom showed up for me, and not because it was of any kind of benefit or convenience or important for her, but just because it was for me. And that was really, really special. So I like to be really like, I like to make sure that if I'm ever speaking about my mom, that it's important that listeners understand that this is the most important person in the world to me, and I love her more than anything. And there, we can still be harmful as parents, even when our intention is maybe not to be so harmful. We still can be. I do not believe that I would feel even slightly confident or comfortable being able to do what I'm doing if my mother were still alive. There's absolutely no way. I'm a look for the meaning kind of girl. I know it's not always helpful in every type of situation. Okay. There are just some things where I'm like, it makes no sense, and I'm not even going to try to make it make sense. But with my mom's passing, I feel like she put to rest trauma that I had to be the one to carry, intergenerational maternal lineage of trauma. And I deemed myself, or it was put on me, I don't know, to be the one to do something about it. And I have the mindset, I have the intelligence, I have this skill set to be able to actually do something about it. But she had to die for that to happen. She did. My mom's death was traumatic. It was painful. It was difficult. It was 4.5 months long. The woman went from being healthy and fine to dead in 4.5 months because of colorectal cancer. And you know, there's so much research that it doesn't even suggest, Kristen, it shows that when you have unprocessed, unhealed trauma over time, it manifests itself into physical ailments and symptoms. And cancer is one of them. My mom had an ACE score of like 8 or 9 or something ridiculous. She had out of 11, right? She had like a incredibly high, it's called an adverse childhood experience score. Mm-hmm. My mom had an incredible amount of trauma herself that she took to her grave. She took that trauma to her grave. The stories behind it, the truth behind it, she took it all to her grave, and that was her wish. That's what she wanted. Mm. And I'm not here to tell her story. Mm-hmm. That's not her story to be told. I'm here to tell my story and to help today's parents mm-hmm. who are working through the trauma of their past, or the bearers of the unprocessed trauma of their family lineage. It's a both and type of situation. I'm here to help those parents learn how to process that trauma, find new ways of being in their own bodies that's safe, mm-hmm. so that we can shift how we are in relationship with the child. When I started, it was all about the child. Mm-hmm. I was doing child-parent psychotherapy, and my mission was to help parents understand their children. Mm-hmm. And I still do that. I still support parents in understanding the meaning behind the child's behaviors. But what I have learned is, as my healing journey, because I've been on this healing journey for like 18 years. So as I continue on with my healing journey, and I have two young children who, you know, continue to trigger me and reignite within me the stuff that I'm still working on, I realize that it's not just about understanding the meaning behind the child's behaviors, but perhaps it's even more so about us understanding the meaning of the child within us. Mm-hmm. That's the work. Mm-hmm. That mm-hmm. is what needs attention and mm-hmm. care and kindness and compassion and love and grace. You know, but if we're used to giving it the critique and the judgment and the harsh words, and we lay down the law and we punish it, we punish ourselves. If we're used to doing that, how on earth do we expect that we are going to show up in any different way for our children? We won't. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We can put in our best freaking effort and we still won't. Mm. And you know what? If that's the case, that's okay too. Because something I'm also learning is that the human soul is designed for evolution. Mm. It's going to continue to evolve. You're going to do it. You're going to stop the patterns and break the cycles, or your children will do it, or your children's children will do it. But like at some point along the line, the patterns are going to be broken because somebody is going to decide enough is enough. In my family line, I was the one who made that decision. Enough is enough. I'm not doing this anymore. We are breaking this, and I am changing how I show up for these kids. And I feel good about how I am as a mom. I'm not perfect, and that's important for someone like me. And my kids know that I'm there for them emotionally. They have boundaries. They know they can't walk all over me. They're not afraid to come to me when they need me. Let me tell you a story. Yeah. When I was 8 years old, it was like 4 days or something before we started. It was the second grade. We had this big jungle gym outside. I grew up outside Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We had this huge jungle gym that my dad built for me. And I was trying so hard to reach out to the fourth monkey bar. You know, remember mm-hmm. like when you used to do that? Yeah. But like I just couldn't reach it totally. So my sister was holding my t-shirt. And was reaching out, so I had a little bit of balance, and my fingertips were on it, and my mom called out, "Girls, time for bed." She let go of my t-shirt. I fell face first onto my wrist, snapped my wrist in half. Ooh. Okay, it's broken. I stand up, I look at it, I can't move it. The first thought I have is, my mom is going to beat me. Mm. That was my first thought. I put my hand behind my back. I go into the house. And my mom's like, "Brianna, why is your hand behind your back?" "No reason, nothing, you know." "Brianna, show me your hand." "No, no, no, I won't show it to you." And then she grabbed my arm and she pulled it and she saw my wrist and then she started flipping out. And I said, "Please don't beat me, please don't beat me. It was an accident, I fell." She never even dawned on her that I was having that kind of reaction. She never, that that didn't make, it didn't hit her. I have other similar stories. In the third grade, when a police officer came and said to the classroom, "Now, children, it's not okay for parents to hit children. Does anybody here have parents who hit them?" And I raised my hand. I also, it might be helpful to know, I'm neurodivergent and just, and I was undiagnosed neurodivergent at that time. And that kind of makes me very radically honest, just like that I don't have a filter. So I was like, oh, my right. mom does. Oh, me. My mom, yeah. my mom hits me every day and she hits me with spoons and she beats us with belts and she throws our shoes out onto the street. And I have marks on my back, you know, like, like I was just so honest. And my teacher wow. came over to me and she goes, "Brianna, you need to put your hand down right now." She was like, "You do not want to cause any trouble."
Oh, honey.
And I was like, oh, what a strange thing for her to say. I was truly perplexed and didn't understand. What was I, like 10 years old or something? So then that evening I went home and I said, "Oh, mom, did you know a police officer came to our school today?" And she said, "Really? What for?" "Oh, he's teaching us about drugs and stuff. And he also told us that it's not okay for parents to hit us." And then I told him that you hit me. And then the room fell completely silent. And this is how my mom responded to that. She said, "So, do you want to be taken away from this family?" I said, "No. Why would I want that?" She goes, "Because that's what they'll do. They won't take me or daddy or your sisters or your brother. We'll all stay here. And they'll just take you away. Is that what you want?" And I was like, "No, I do not want that." She goes, "Then I think you should keep what happens in this house inside this house."
Oh,
formative. Formative. As a parent now, never. If my children have feedback for me about my behavior, if they show me that my behavior is dysfunctional and harming them, I'm going to sit with that and I'm going to honor their experience because their experience is important. It matters.
You're not just evolved. You are an anomaly. Well, I want you to tell me in your experience as a professional working with parents. To me, it sounds like you're an anomaly in that you're not just taking the next step in your family lineage of parenting. You've taken a gigantic leap.
Yeah.
From how you were parented to how you're parenting. And as you mentioned, due to your skill set, your gifts, the grace of God, whatever it is, your sheer will, your neurodivergence, which tells you, I have no other way to be, but just really, really honest. What are you finding in working with people? How ready are people to do this? How receptive? How big of a leap? Or is it a baby step? Or because I have similar, I'm going through something similar in my parenting with how I was parented, but I didn't have as big of a leap to make. But this is something my brother and I talk about a lot, is that the burden and responsibility of being that generation who's going to break the cycle. But what are you finding in working with people? Like, where are people? And what is the range? How big of a leap? How is this for people that you're working with? What is this like?
Yeah. It's a really vulnerable process, Kristen. No matter how big of a leap, or if you're just doing a little baby step, it's still a vulnerable process to open yourself up to reflecting honestly on your childhood and the impact that it has had on you, while also maintaining some semblance of real love and compassion and respect for your parents. Yeah. That's a whole thing in and of itself, being able to do that.
Yeah.
And then being able to humble ourselves in the process of parenting. Letting the child be the teacher. Letting the child let you know when you're out of line. Just as often as you might be letting your child know when they're out of line. It's humbling for us because most of us didn't really have parents who modeled that and who did that. So we're like, I find that our generation is doing like double duty. We're being the parents that we need for ourselves, and we're being the parents that our children need. And that's a lot of work. We are like paving the way for healing. And I believe that our kids, this current generation, and then our children, they are going to actually make this steps toward real change. Right. But we got to heal. We're in a real healing phase of humanity right now. In terms of what do I see? I have a collective audience right now of a little over 400,000 people that I've built in about a year.
Oh my God, Bree.
Yeah. So to me, from my perspective, this message is resonating. People want to do the work. The biggest hiccups I hear are I don't know how to do the work, or I'm doing the work and I'm not seeing the results fast enough because we are still kind of stuck on outcome oriented instead of shifting into process oriented. But that's okay. We're working on it. We're working on getting to being about the process and respecting that there is no destination. Right? There's no like grand portal that you will enter through that says you are healed. That's not going to happen. It's a, I am healing. We have to embrace that.
As a parent, I got to say that's, as a parent and one of your audience members, that's a source of frustration for me. And that probably comes from my own perfectionism of not wanting to be the one who's healing, wanting to be the one who's healed and who's just that fucking awesome parent who doesn't make the same mistakes. And it's just, like you said, that humility and that realism of like, you know, we're not going to turn this ship around in one generation. We're not. Yeah. We're going to be in process, and my kids are going to see the messy middle, and my kids are going to see me apologizing to them like almost every day.
Yeah.
About how I lost my cool again and how the morning routine was stressful for me and how to hear my 5-year-old say, "Mom, remember you said you were going to be more gentle with me," and to have me just go like, "Oh God, I don't want, you know, is that what I want? Is that what I want my kid to be? I don't want him to remember Mom was harsh." That's what he says. "Mom, you said you weren't going to be harsh with me, remember? Because I lost my patience because we're running late." You know, the whole thing of just like, gosh, how mad I can get at myself for not getting it right sooner, faster, more consistently. But I think what you're saying is so helpful, just to, it's that humility of being like, you know what? Like, this is just where we are. This is where we are in the evolution of my family, of humanity, of society, my generation. Hopefully my kids will carry the torch even further. And it's just going to be this generations long process.
They will. They
and
will.
Maybe even
and
a
he
cycle.
Already is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your kids already are carrying the torch.
Yeah.
Would you have felt comfortable telling your parents, "Hey, you're being too harsh with me"?
You know what? And I got to say, just like you, you know, you said about recognizing the good. And we do, you know, parenting does come up a lot in my podcast, in my various conversations, because this is what we're doing, right? But, you know, no, I wouldn't have. And I adore my parents. My parents are amazing people. But no, I wouldn't have felt comfortable.
Right.
And that's the one spot. That's my one little glimmer of hope.
Yeah.
Whenever I find myself beating myself up or disappointed in myself for not doing better, is that like, you know, at least I've created a scenario where my kids can say, "Mom, remember?"
Right.
And not fear me retaliating or shutting down, you know, or being offended by their feedback. That I feel like it seems like a small thing, but it's actually a huge dynamic shift.
It is so freaking huge. Now, I don't want to like pull up things and make anything, you know, uncomfortable for you, but you know, I know a little bit about what's been going on in your personal life just because I follow you on Facebook and I read the things that you put up there. But I think about, I'm going to speak generally, maybe if that's okay.
Yeah.
I think about someone who's in an unhappy relationship, who things aren't going the way that they envision.
Yeah.
And who keeps it to themselves and doesn't feel confident to say what they need to say. Because they don't trust that there is direction. But when that parent finally says, "Hey, I got to pull the plug. I got to say what I need to say. We got to shift gears." As difficult as that might be for the child, it also models and teaches the child, don't accept what doesn't bring you joy. And do it with love. Do it with kindness. Do it with heart and spirit and compassion. And so your son being able to say that to you, I think is a reflection of how you walk every day in your own life. It's not a reflection of your failure and what you're doing wrong as a mother. It's more so a reflection of, you're teaching me to speak up when things don't feel good for me, mommy. Mm. What a freaking blessing. That's so awesome that he's learning that. And he's five. He's five and he's learning that.
Yeah. And that's something I'm 43 and I feel like I run into these like dead ends every aspect of my life where I'm like, I'm not saying what needs to be said. I'm not saying what needs to be said, you know? And it's like, what a burden and a learning challenge that I think is going to be ongoing for me. That's one of my burdens to bear and to learn from. And it's
there,
like,
you go.
How many times in the moment I think I'm good. And then I leave the situation and I go, but that's not at all what I meant. Or I said this, but I totally didn't mean that. Or like, oh my God, I was fawning the whole time. Or I mean, whatever it is, to realize, wow, that wasn't even anything. Or have to have a friend say, ew, they said that to you? That sounds terrible. And have me go, oh my God, you're right. That was terrible. In the moment I was like, nod and smile. And walking away from that situation, I felt so icky and I couldn't figure out why. And then it took someone else saying, oh, they said that to you? And I'm like, oh my gosh, how, talk about gaslighting ourselves, how out of touch I can be with my own process to not even know what I was thinking or feeling until someone else says, yuck. And I go, you're right, yuck. Wow. Yeah.
This is how we heal. Mm-hmm. And this is how we heal the whatever it is that we pass down to our children. Mm. We set the children up for just a little less emotional pain. Mm. They'll still have something because, again, mm-hmm. the human soul is designed for evolution and growth is painful. The only way to grow is through hardship. If everything's easy peasy, perfect views, you got all you need all the time, you have no reason to grow. Growth has to be messy. It has to be a little dirty. It has to be complicated. And I think when we really appreciate that, when we accept it, it's immense for the spirit.
I'm thinking about like an image of a wound healing. Like when wounds heal, they're itchy and sometimes they're goopy and they're sensitive and they're tight. You know, it's like the process of healing is not pleasant. No. I mean, we could surround it with rainbows and butterflies, but it's really would be a mistake to. I mean, the aftermath of the healing could be rainbows and butterflies, but the process of it is very uncomfortable. Can I talk? I want to get a little bit into like a little like drama, a little drama. Because like sometimes I'll go into your comment section. This is not so much recently, but like earlier on when you were building your audience and like find some dissenting voices. I'm just curious. I'm so curious about how you have handled internally and externally your. You know, here you are putting yourself out there, you know, on your conscious mommy profile. You're putting yourself out there. You're suggesting to people these ways of parenting that are not normal, right?
They're not traditional, I would say.
They're not traditional. They're controversial in some people's minds. They're uncomfortable, vulnerable, bringing up a lot of stuff for people, and people will have things to say to you about how that's unrealistic or God, you could never actually say that to your kids. Or can we talk about that? Cause you're touching a nerve with people.
I know.
And I want to know how that is for you. Cause first of all, you're so freaking brave to be this woman who, you know, I mean, to be anybody putting yourself out there is so brave, but to be putting yourself out there so vulnerably, and you have to model the very parenting that you're suggesting to people, you're having to model in how you interact with and deal with people who have things to say to you that are critical. Yes. I want to know how that has been for you. I'm like,
well, I mean, it is an area of growth probably for me. I've gotten a lot better at being able to see those dissenting comments, which almost always come from boomers or people who are really committed to continuing the traditional parenting paradigm that includes spanking and yelling at children and shaming children, punishing children, you know, kind of like your classic authoritarian home. And so I first had to start by like working through my triggers of that, like people advocating violence against children as someone who was abused, and those same people would probably not agree that I was abused, right? They would probably say, well, you were spanked and you deserved it, but like it wasn't just a spank, or even still, like spanking, according to the research, still has the same effect in the brain as serious physical abuse does. So I had to kind of work through my own trauma responses to hearing people advocate for that, mm-hmm. while also learning how to create some kind of like, I don't know how to describe it, but like a protective shield around my energy field. Mm. I'm a very empathic person. Most therapists are like highly intuitive and highly empathic. And also just having, you know, history of PTSD, et cetera, I'm kind of like an open vessel. And I can easily be open and then activated. And if I'm not actively protecting that field, I can get pierced really easily. Mm. And then I go into whatever trauma responses I'm going to have. And so being able to like envision a nice protective white light where I'm sending out love, but I am not taking in whatever it is that you are giving to me, has been very helpful for me. I also, I've learned a lot about communication, being married, and being married for 9 years now, and working with parents, has taught me a lot about how to communicate, in a way that is diplomatic and clear and assertive, while also not taking on other people's reactions to that. And so, you know, when I get the boomers, you're raising pansies, you're, you know, whatever, I'm just, it kind of like, I sometimes want to get snarky and be like, but you are the guys who raised us. So are you actually just criticizing yourself? Because you think we're such bad parents, but like you raised us, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But instead of getting super snarky, I just, I again, you know, validate. Yeah. You are, it's okay to feel concerned for how the future is. I hear that you're concerned about your grandkids, and I'm going to ask you to trust that the modern parents, today's parents, are doing the best they can with what they have, just like you did.
Mm.
So let's work on that. Let's work on trusting that.
Mm.
You know, the kids need discipline, you know, that those kinds of comments. I get those comments on videos where I'm talking about having boundaries with children. So what they're really saying is kids need punishments. They're not recognizing that I'm actually teaching discipline. A boundary is a form of discipline. It's teaching a child what is acceptable and what is not acceptable, what works for our family and what doesn't work for our family. But, you know, conscious parents also respect that boundaries are a two-way street. Children get to have boundaries with adults too. Mm-hmm. And that is a message that a lot of folks really struggle to hear.
Yeah, that's right? Revolutionary for a lot of people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the expectation is that children are obedient.
Yeah, it's just one direction. It's just one direction. The authority, yeah.
And I hear that. Kids need to listen to authority. Kids mm-hmm. need to learn to obey authority or else they're going to mm-hmm. go to jail. Okay. Why are we so limited in our way of thinking? I would not consider myself obedient. I'm not obedient. I'm really in no way would I describe myself as an obedient person. And I don't think anybody would be like, oh, Brianna's so obedient. Like, I think it's kind of the opposite. Like, I think they'd be like, wow, Brianna just does whatever the heck she wants.
Yeah. She's a wild card.
She's kind of a wild card.
In the best way, though.
Yes. You don't know what you're going to get with her.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I understand social roles. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I respect social boundaries. I understand that if the speed limit says 30 and I go 40 and I get pulled over, I'm probably going to get a ticket. I respect that social role and I do my best to do that because I respect the lives of others and I understand that those rules are in place for all of our well-being, right? But a lot of rules are pretty arbitrary and I might push back on them a little bit. When I encounter such arbitrary rules, I will not get into politics because there are a lot of arbitrary things going on in the political world right now that bother me. So you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it's not about like creating these obedient children who just like follow authority and don't know how to think for themselves. Mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. about teaching children how to be in relationship to society mm-hmm. in a way where everybody is honored and cared for. And that is what is so freaking revolutionary. A society where everyone is prioritized, everyone is thought about, everyone is cared for. Truly a society for all. That is, we don't have that. We literally do not have that on planet Earth just yet. There might be some small, you know, indigenous communities that behave in such beautiful ways that we should all be mirroring. But as a global society, we are not doing that. And I think if we create that in the family system, it has a real potential to shift that in the greater exosystem of how our societies govern and operate.
Well, it sounds like your spiritual beliefs really, really inform. I mean, it's all there are all these streams flowing into this massive river that's propelling your work.
Yeah.
Because what you're talking about is to use your word, is consciousness, mm-hmm. right? Not just the awareness of. We'll talk more about and we started this conversation with talking about, you know, we haven't really talked too much about this. I don't know that we have to, but how your spiritual, you know, vision, beliefs feed into your vision and mission for what you do with parenting. You know, what is this conscious parenting? How does it all kind of fold together in this bigger vision of how the world should be? Because you're clearly propelled by a vision.
Yeah, I am. I'm propelled by a vision that where all the individuality of each being, every being, not just a human being, but literally every being on this earth, is seen as valuable, important, significant. That it is not meaningless. That being has real purpose and is important to our full way of being together. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as I was saying in the very beginning, I am still going through a deconstruction of my Christian Catholic upbringing. There are just so many issues with religiosity that I was finding to be dogmatic, and like the fact that it was taboo to question it, that to be a part of the group, I have to accept that this wafer and wine is the literal body and blood of Christ. I always in my mind thought it was a symbol. But then when I learned that people believe that it is, that they're actually eating the body of Christ, I was perplexed. Again, neurodivergent, like I do not get it. That literally does not make sense to me. Mm-hmm. That the Virgin Mary was a virgin, that her, you know, the Immaculate Conception, that she went up into, she was absorbed into heaven, you know. Mm-hmm. Again, like mm-hmm. all, they're about as real to me as, like, you know, Venus, goddess of love.
Yeah, yeah.
But to belong to this place where my heart was, I felt like such a fraud because I couldn't believe it. And then I went through a very dark period where I just thought I was possessed by the devil and I'm evil and I'm bad. And this is the devil's way of getting me. And you know what I mean? Like, all the evangelical and, you know, intense things that we hear when we start to question, we're told that we're just being raptured by the devil. Until I realized something that I did not learn in my religious upbringing. I never learned to see God in others. And I never learned to see God in everything. And I never learned to see God in myself. I learned to seek it outside of me because I was not worthy without it. And as I reflected on this, I realized I have been conditioned to be in an abusive relationship where the only way I can get love is if I do exactly what I'm being told to do. And otherwise, I am not loved and I am unworthy and I am an abomination. That is, if somebody came into my therapy room and said, "This is what my husband does to me," I would say, "You're in an abusive relationship. We need to pack your bags, get your kids safe, and get you out of there." Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that was very freeing for me to recognize that. And as I started to allow myself to see God in everything and everyone and everywhere, and even in myself, to see like the real divinity, I realized that's what's missing, is that we're not actually seeing how precious each one of us is. So here's something I say all the time. At some point in humanity, maybe in the next 100 or 200 years, it will no longer be a conversation of I'm Catholic, I'm Protestant, I'm Muslim, I'm Buddhist, I'm this, I'm that. And it will instead be an entire collection of humanity sharing their vision of what is celestial and God and truth. And then we'll take all of those ideas together and it will barely even reflect an eighth, a tenth, a 100th of the pure magnificence that is around us. That is the source of divine love. Whether or not that is a divine being that, you know, is some kind of all creator God is insignificant, because when we accept that we are of that, we are from that, and we will return to that. And that is what unites us all, every single living being on this planet is that level of love. And you get that into your body now, it changes you.
When I watch your videos and you model how to communicate with children, there's so much love and so much respect and honoring. It's almost too much. Mm-hmm. I think in this sense of like, you can't look at the face, like it's too much. Like, because our capacity, well, I'll speak for myself, my capacity for understanding and accepting myself as that beloved is limited.
Yeah.
And it's like, I see that we're slowly trying to balloon, trying to stretch our capacity mm-hmm. for the kind of love that we all are and that we all deserve.
Right.
And I feel this in my work with my preschoolers. Mm-hmm. I come in as a musician. I visit, you know, I come and I visit for 20 minutes in each class. And I see myself as this like minister of not just music, but of love. I get to come into these rooms and I get to just love these kids in a way that's different than their teachers love them, because the teachers, just let's just speak practically, they're with them all day, every day. Mm-hmm. They're going to have a very different relationship with those students than I have. I have the joy and the freedom to come in and just like bring that love and light and then leave and not have to sit there for the shoe tying and the fights and the nose wiping. It's different, you know? They're like the full-time parent, right? But I get to come in and just stretch. I feel like I just get to come in and just stretch a little bit the patience, tolerance, you know, the compassion. I hope that that's what I do for the kids, but also honestly, secretly, I hope I do that for the teachers too. Because yeah. I think, you know, as a parent, it can be so hard sometimes to see through the weeds of it all. And when we give ourselves the gift and the challenge of pausing and asking those questions, becoming more conscious, for better or worse, right? Mm-hmm. Is this the kind of parent I want to be? Is this the way that I want to treat the most precious people on earth, these children? You know, it can almost, I think it challenges us. It's challenging because then we do have to look at the ways in which we don't live up to that and live in that uncomfortable vulnerability and humility. But as I'm listening yeah. to you talk about your vision for the world and for God and unity, and it's like to be able to bring that vision and that capacity for love to our relationship with our children, what a freaking gift. Like, and so I like to see your work as giving us those opportunities to look and to reflect and to pause and to expand, you know, even though it can be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I look at you and I see you, it's like, I see this description might sound a little grotesque, but just bear with me. Like, and this is the empathy. Like, I see you as like being built on the outside of like heart muscle.
Wow.
And I've always experienced you like that. I've always experienced you like that when we would practice for mass or when we did the play, you know, anytime we do, that you just bring this openness and this, like you wear your heart on your sleeve. But like mm-hmm. as though like you are like made of heart. Mm-hmm. And I just think that I think our kids actually see us like that more often than we realize mm-hmm. and are much more accepting and forgiving of us than we think they are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%.
But like what a raw way to live. How scary.
It is.
But also how beautiful.
It is scary, but it is also beautiful. We live in a world that would rather us block our hearts and be capitalists, make other people money, and just live life to the status quo. That's the current, like, what is an acceptable life.
That's the mainstream. And yeah.
That's the mainstream. And there is nothing wrong with that. Let me tell you right now, I am all for the ordinary. I think we need to appreciate the ordinary a lot more mm-hmm. than we do. Mm-hmm. I think this whole strive for everybody and everything to be extraordinary and big and huge and own, you know, have all the things. No, that is not realistic, and that's hurting our mental health, and that's driving us further away from love. But when we really invite love in, you know, I am a bit fascinated by the idea that you always found me to be so loving, because I always felt that. I always felt that I was loving, but I always, like, I believe that people would just see right through it and see how bad I really was on the inside. You know, that was always my big thing. I don't feel that so much anymore. Now, if people do feel negatively about me, I respect that I'm not everybody's cup of tea, and I'm okay with that. And I also understand that I am big, and it's okay if I'm too activating, if I'm too dramatic. I've learned to be okay that is how some folks will receive me, and I can't waste my time on trying to be everything for everybody. I just must focus on the love for myself, love for my community, love for my family, love for my planet, love for the stranger on the street, love for the person yelling at me for whatever reason. Love. And that I teach parents to teach their children that you send them love, but you have a boundary for yourself. You don't take in whatever it is that they're giving to you, but you send them love. And there is something really beautiful about that. And it does make you, I think, a bit more vulnerable. Always. Anytime we're going against the grain, you're going to be more vulnerable. Anytime. And I think that's where real growth ends up being. That's where you see that you will bloom, you will sprout.
I just really appreciate you so much and admire your courage and your willingness to really, you know, put yourself out there, to offer yourself in all the ways that you do, as, you know, as an example, but also as a teacher, as a lover, you know, meaning not, you know, as a lover of life and of people, and yeah, as a lover. Can you talk a little bit about, I think it's probably time for us to start to wrap, but I want you to talk about like what you've got going on. Like, where can people, I know you have a course that you're registering people for. Where can people find you? What's going on currently? How can people plug into the work that you're, I don't even want to say the work that you're doing. It seems so commonplace. Like, I just like the light that you are emitting. How can people get closer to your light and to you and learn from you?
Oh, that's such a great way to say it. Thank you.
It's so true.
best places to, you know, connect and to learn more about this light here is Instagram or social media. Is I was at Conscious Mommy, CONSCIOUS. I have a newsletter that I send out every week, so folks can sign up for the newsletter. It's a little daily or weekly dose of wisdom that will give you some practical strategies as well as some insight, because that's really what I'm all about, is the blend of both. And I'm offering workshops and classes and things like that periodically throughout the year, and they're themed. So, you know, if you follow along in any of those avenues, you'll learn about all of those offerings. But, you know, consciousmommy.com is a great place to find out everything too.
Yeah. So you guys have to hop on and check out the work that Brianna's doing. And, you know, I love when your videos pop up on my feed and I get to see you whispering to the camera your little side notes. And she just has, and you guys, she's just truly a beautiful woman. Like, Brianna's just a beautiful person to look at. She has a gorgeous smile. I think that, you know, like, when we are working on reparenting ourselves or parenting ourselves as parents, like, Brianna, you're just such a beautiful person to teach us how to do that, because you embody that love and that light. So check out what Brianna's got going on. You don't want to miss what's coming up in her career. And love to see your boys, by the way, are like little mini yous. They really just look just like you. They really do.
They're beautiful. So cute.
How old are they now?
Mateo will be 5 soon, and Joe, it just turned 2 in December.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Just so, so sweet. Boy moms. Two boys. Mommies. Love having boys.
Thank you so much for having me. This was an amazing, everything about this was amazing. Thank you for having me. Come on. Well, let's have another conversation another time.
I amen to that. I feel like we just barely scratched the surface. So much more to say. And let's spend some time together in real life soon. I would love to give you a big hug and maybe sing some songs together and karaoke.
I'm going to text Dan right now.
Oh my gosh. We need a little reunion. Let's just get together and jam. I love you so much. And I'm so, so thankful to know you and to just be able to be in your light. And I so appreciate you.
Thank you, Kristen.
If you are still with me, wow, you are a super trooper. Thank you so much for listening today. If you enjoyed the podcast and you'd like to help support it, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review, or do all three. And to catch all the latest from me, please follow me on Instagram at The Sharing Project Podcast. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.